I'm happy to be with you all this evening. I think this program was organized in a rather short notice. Madhupati Prabhu had been asking me to come and do the program here in central New Jersey. This time my program was quite packed, and at first when he actually sent me an email to India, my response was that it won't be possible because most of the programs are already organized and there was no way I could make it. But then when we met, he just kept on requesting me that somehow to fit in one evening. And the only time I could actually have that was this evening. It had been quite hectic. Day before yesterday I went to Boston, and today I came back from Boston, and practically I came straight back here. I'm happy to be here, and I'm also happy to see how the congregation is growing. And obviously the number of children is growing. It seems that Purnachandra is having quite a time trying to organize things. Purnachandra, the way to control them is to make them come and sit down here. Okay. Sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to be taken to somebody else's house when he was a little boy. And how many of you are coming for the first time? Here for the first time, here for the first time, here also for the first time. Okay. Welcome to ISKCON congregation. And how many of you got involved recently with ISKCON? Yeah. Okay, very good. And the topic that I selected to speak on today is the importance of surrendering to Krishna. To address this topic, the first thing we have to consider is who is Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Supreme Personality of Godhead means the one who is the Supreme and who is the Supreme Creator, Supreme Maintainer of everything and everybody. That is, according to the Vedic understanding, he is described as Bhagavan. The expression Bhagavan has been translated by our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Sanskrit expression Bhagavan means Bhaga Asti Iti Bhagavan. One who has Bhaga is Bhagavan. One who possesses something, he is called Pan, the possessor. Like one who possesses wealth, he is known as Dhanavan. Dhan means wealth and Ban means the possessor. One who has beauty, he is Rupavan. Rup means beauty. Similarly, Gunavan. And in the same context, we can understand the meaning of the word Bhagavan. One who has Bhaga is Bhagavan. Now, this expression Bhaga indicates total wealth, total strength, total beauty, total fame, total knowledge, and total renunciation. That means one who has all the wealth, all the strength, all the beauty, all fame, all knowledge and all renunciation is Bhagavan. Now, is there anybody who can claim that he has all the wealth? Some people may have some wealth, but all the wealth. Aisharjasya samagrasya. Aisharja means wealth and samagra means entire. One who has all the wealth is one aspect. Not just one, there are six considerations, six aspects. All the wealth, Virjasya, all the strength, Yashasya, all the fame, Shriya, all beauty, Jnana, all knowledge, Vaidagya, all renunciation. Sannam iti Bhagangana. One who has this Sanyang, that six opulences to an absolute extent, he is Bhagavan. Now, is there anybody who can claim or who has all these six qualities? One who possesses all these six opulences to an absolute extent? The Vedas are describing, yes. He is ekam eva adityaha parama purusha. He is ekam, he is one. Eva adityam, without a second. He is one without a second, parama purusha, supreme personality. Therefore, the translation of his identity has in English has been described as Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parama Purusha. He is the Supreme Personality. Again, Supreme has been defined. Paramaha has been defined as Asamordha. Asama, no one is equal to him. Urdha, no one is superior to him. So that is the identity, or that's the definition of Supreme. No one is equal to him, no one is superior to him. So that personality, although he is one without a second, he has many names according to his qualities and activities, pastimes. For example, say in English, how God sometimes is described as omnipotent. Omni, the Latin expression omni means all. Potent means power. Who is all powerful. Now who is all powerful? He is all powerful. So it's his quality. He is all powerful, therefore he is omnipotent. He is omniscient. So in this way, according to his qualities, he has his names. His names are not to identify him by some name, as in the case of us. For our identification, we need a name. But he doesn't need a name like that. But his qualities are synonymous to his names. His qualities becomes his names. Similarly, Krishna, the word Krishna means all attractive. All attractive. He is all attractive. Now again, we can consider that, like, what are the features of attraction? So these are actually, these six qualities that you mentioned that he has to an absolute extent, these six qualities are actually the features of attraction. Beauty, strength, wealth, fame, knowledge and renunciation. So anyone who has these, to some extent, is attractive, he or she is attractive. One who is beautiful is attractive, one who is wealthy is attractive, and so forth. Now consider, he has all these six to the fullest extent. Therefore, he is all attractive. And that is Krishna. Similarly, he is the supreme enjoyer and the giver of the supreme pleasure. Therefore, he is Rama. He delivers us from our miserable condition. Therefore, he is Hari. He sustains all the living entities. Therefore, he is Narayan. He is the origin of the creation, therefore he is Vishnu. He is the son of Nanda Maharaj, therefore he is Nanda Nandan. He is very fond of the, he is the dear, very dear to the gopis, therefore he is Gopijana Ballava. He is the lord of the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan, therefore he is Gopinath. So these, all these names that he has is due to his qualities and pastimes. But he is one without a second. Therefore he is Krishna, therefore he is Ram, therefore he is Narayan, therefore he is Vishnu, therefore he is Bhamana, Kurma, Nishingha, Varaha. So these are all his different activities in different incarnations. So that is the supreme personality of Godhead. And we all are his parts and parcels. He is the supreme and we are his separated parts and parcels. He expands in many ways, specifically in two different ways. His one expansion is Swamsa and his other expansion is Bibhinnamsa. Swamsa, he himself expands himself as he is. There's no difference in those expansions. That is called Swamsa expansion. Like he expands himself as Narayan. he expands himself as Vishnu. There is no difference between Krishna and Vishnu. He expands himself as Balarama. There is no difference between Krishna and Balarama. There is no difference between Krishna and Sankarshan. Krishna and Narayan, Krishna and Vishnu, Krishna and Nrisimha, Krishna and Varaha. Same personality. In Brahma Samhita, that point has been explained as he expands with his complete potency, total potency. There is no difference between him and his expansion. Just as many candles are lit, when they are lit, all the candles give out the same amount of light and same amount of heat. The potency is same. So similarly, his expansions are just complete replication of himself. Now he is the supreme creator and he is the supreme maintainer. We may not understand how he created everything. But at least one thing we can understand when we think about it a little deeply, that how wonderfully he is maintaining everything. He is maintaining everything. Like speak about maintenance, like consider the earth is round, we all are situated on the surface of the earth, and the earth is moving with tremendous speed. Now consider if there is a round object and there is something placed on top of it, on the surface of it, and it moves, what would happen? Won't those objects get thrown away as it starts to move? Now consider the situation of our situation on the surface of the earth. We are placed on the surface of the earth and the earth is moving at a tremendous speed. But we are not getting thrown out into space. Why? We call it gravity, gravitational pull. Fine, we may name it by any name, but who created that? Who made this arrangement? So that is how he is maintaining. We all are here to sustain ourselves, we need food. Who is providing for our foods? All the food that we have been eating and all the food that we will be eating, who is providing? And see how wonderfully he is providing. A seed falls on the ground and gradually it grows into a seedling and it grows into a tree. Then in the tree comes the fruits or nuts or grains. And then in the fruits there are seeds. In those seeds there are trees. In those trees there are innumerable fruits. And in those fruits there are innumerable trees, or innumerable seeds, and in those seeds there are innumerable trees. Tell me who made this arrangement. The supply of our food for eternity has been arranged by him in this way. The next two, more important than food actually is water. The water, just consider how we are getting the supply of water. New Jersey may be quite close to the ocean, but just consider the mid-USA. Like the water body is there all around in the ocean, but how the water is being transported to the Midlands. The sun is evaporating the water from the ocean that is forming into cloud, and then those clouds are transported to different parts by the wind, and then those clouds are condensing and coming down in the form of raindrops. Tell me, who made this arrangement? Now, if somebody says these are all accidental happening, I would just consider, please give it a deeper thought before you make a statement like that. Out of accident you never get order. Out of accident you simply get chaos. Like, I forgot the name of one American philosopher, most probably it was Will Durant. He mentioned that the statement, that the concept that creation came out of accident sounds as absurd as saying that there was an explosion in a printing press and when the types fell, the Webster Dictionary was printed. So, from accident we never get order. Through intelligent arrangement we get order. Accident never gives order, it simply brings chaos. You can't say that there was an accident in the corner of the street and the traffic lights appeared. And another thing is to claim that these are all the outcome of accident. Just simply consider one, this simple point as I mentioned. A seed falls on the ground and a tree appears from that seed. In the tree there are fruits. In the fruit there are seeds. In the seeds there are trees. In the trees there are fruits. Now tell me, will anybody be able to ever create something like that in a laboratory through some chemical combinations? What to speak of life? Can even a seed of a tree be manufactured or produced in a laboratory? They'll never be able to. This is how wonderful the creation of the Lord is, and this is how wonderfully the Lord is maintaining everything. We considered about food, we considered about water. The most important ingredient for our survival actually is oxygen. We are breathing in oxygen and giving out carbon dioxide. If this process continued, then at some point the whole atmosphere would have been filled with carbon dioxide and there wouldn't have been any oxygen left. But did it ever happen? No, why not? The trees and plants are taking carbon dioxide and giving out oxygen. Now tell me, who made this arrangement? So any intelligent probing into this subject will lead us to the conclusion that somebody who is maintaining this creation in such a wonderful way. We may not be able to see the Lord with our eyes. We may not be able to see God with our eyes. But at least with our intelligence we can see His working. So that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one of the most attractive names of that personality is Krishna. So Krishna, all attractive Supreme Personality who is maintaining everything, is also naturally taking care of us in all respects. He is taking care of everyone. Not only the human beings, he is taking care of every living entity, every single creature. Even the ants are being maintained by him. Even the insects are being maintained by him. All the animals are being maintained by him. All the reptiles are being maintained by him. And all of us are being maintained by him. So when he is already maintaining us, or when he is already taking care of us in all respects, isn't it natural that if we surrender unto him, that means if we allow him to take care of us, then we can become free from all anxiety. And this is how simple he is, or this is how simple it is to solve all the problems of our lives. He is taking care of everybody. People are scared, people are afraid of shortage of food, shortage of water, and so forth. But you can see in the nature, he is taking care of everyone, just like the father takes care of all his children. He is taking care of us in all respects. Not only us, even the ants, even the animals, even the reptiles, even the birds. An ant needs a grain of sugar. No ant is starving in the nature. An elephant needs a few hundred kilograms of food every day. The elephant also has abundant supply. In nature, we don't see any scarcity. In any community, there is no scarcity whatsoever. But there is scarcity, if at all, there is any scarcity that is only in the human society. Or if any scarcity has been created in any other society, that is also created by the human beings. Take a bag of rice and keep it in the middle of the road at night. In the morning, what will happen? Some birds will come, eat as much as they need, and fly away. Some animals will come, eat as much as they need, and go away. But as soon as a man comes, he'll pick up the whole bag and walk away. And that's the problem with the human beings. They are not content with the supply that the Lord has already provided. Their greed, their avarice, is causing them to get more and more and more, way beyond they actually need. This is how the human society is actually causing an incredible damage to the entire planet. Like, just consider, oxygen is being converted by carbon dioxide is being converted into oxygen by the trees and plants. Now, human beings, in the name of civilization, what they're doing, in the name of industrial progress, what they're doing, they're cutting the trees, burning them to run their machines, and filling the atmosphere with carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide. What we need is actually oxygen, but what human endeavor is doing? Just pumping all the carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide in the atmosphere. All these human endeavors, ultimately what are they doing? Like in India, we are becoming very painfully aware of one situation, that there is an acute short, there is going to be an acute shortage of water. Just today, somebody was telling me, in Calcutta there is a lake. I grew up in Calcutta, so that lake was, I never seen any situation where the lake got dry. But now the lake became dry. The rivers are drying out. Why all these things are happening? It's because man's unnecessary interference with God's creation. He knows how to maintain everything, but we are not satisfied with his arrangement. We are simply trying to interfere into his arrangement in the name of progress. But what is the outcome? The outcome is that we are turning this earth into such a critical situation that within a very short time, this whole planet will become a desert. And what to speak of the nuclear weapons that they have created, the nuclear warheads. Once they start releasing them, no one knows what's going to happen to this planet. Therefore, it is a time to seriously consider, what are we going to do? We may think that, okay, fine, we are going to enjoy our life, we are going to drive the most fancy cars, we are going to live in the most beautiful house, and we'll have the most luxurious and comfortable arrangements for ourselves. But do you ever consider what's going to happen to our children and grandchildren? They won't have any food to eat. In order to have bumper crop, in order to have high yield in our cultivation, we are using very, very powerful fertilizers. What's going to be the outcome of that? The soil is getting burnt out. Yes, we are producing bumper crop, two times, three times more than it should have otherwise produced. But we are not considering that it's burning out the soil. And the soil is automatically becoming so dependent upon these fertilizers that if there is a situation when there is no fertilizers, there won't be any yield. So this is how insane way the human beings are, the human society is moving on to a state of extremely critical situation which can be very, very dangerous and which can eventually destroy the whole civilization. Because of our greed, we are actually destroying this arrangement of the Lord. That is why it is important that we begin to realize the divine arrangement that the Lord has already made. There is no need for us to separately create any arrangement. Rather, submit ourselves to his arrangement. And then our lives will automatically become joyful. Not only our life will become peaceful and free from anxiety, but our life will truly become full of joy. So that is why the intelligent proposal is to surrender to the Lord. And what happens when we surrender to him? When we surrender to him, he takes care of us. Just consider, when even we are not surrendered to him, he is taking care of us. So what to speak of when we surrender to him? And when we read the scriptures, then we get to see how wonderfully he protects his devotees. Devotees means those who are surrendered to him. When one surrenders to him, how wonderfully he takes care of them. a little child, Prahlad, just 5 years old. His father, the king of the demons, wanted to kill him. He tried in so many ways to kill him. His father was so powerful that he even defeated the devas in heaven. He had weapons that are far more advanced than nuclear weapons. But still he couldn't do anything to his son, whom he wanted to kill. Being the father, he wanted to kill his own son, a 5-year-old son. He couldn't do that. Why? Because Krishna was protecting him. I'm sure, since most of you are coming from Indian background, you know that expression that when Krishna protects, no one can kill you. When Krishna wants to kill you, then no one can protect you. So that is Krishna. So when we have a personality like that to take care of us, why shouldn't we submit ourselves, surrender ourselves to Him? And when we do that, as you mentioned, like when we surrender to Him, then there is no way of knowing how wonderfully He is going to maintain us. He protected Prahlad, He protected Dhruva, He protected Draupadi, He protected Arjun in so many ways, so many times. Are these fairy tales or they're real? They're factual. So if Krishna protects them, then if I become a devotee of Krishna, why will He not protect me? Or is it that Krishna will protect them but not me? We should never think that way. Rather, Krishna demonstrated all those wonderful incidences simply to remind us that if you surrender, then I will protect you. Just take shelter of me. If you take shelter of me, then I will give you all protection. That is Krishna's promise. Konteya pratijanihi na me bhakta pranashyati. Krishna asked Arjuna to declare boldly that his devotees will never vanquish. Those who take shelter of him, they will never perish. Krishna will protect. So this is Krishna's promise, and now the consideration is how sincerely we are going to take those instructions. Those who take shelter of Krishna, they themselves experience how wonderfully Krishna gives protection. So many devotees have so many wonderful anecdotes to describe how Krishna protected them. So this is how Krishna actually establishes our faith. Take shelter of me, I will take care of you. And that is the real utilization or application of our intelligence. Our intelligence is simply to come to the point of surrendering to Krishna. We have our intelligence simply to understand who Krishna is and surrender unto Him. That is the sign of intelligence. That's why human life is so precious. Other forms of lives do not have this facility. The other forms of life do not have this opportunity to question who God is. They can't have the opportunity to understand how He is taking care of them, and they do not have the ability to decide to surrender unto Him. But human beings have. Why? Because the human beings have been endowed with a developed intelligence. That intelligence is not to exploit the nature. That is the misutilization of human intelligence. Trying to exploit this nature for their sense gratification. The real objective of this intelligence is to recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto Him. Those who do that, their lives become successful, their existence become meaningful. Those who don't, they simply waste a wonderful opportunity. So that is why it is important that we consider ourselves, what we are going to do now. Now that we've got this human form of life, what are we going to do with this opportunity? And if somebody wants to take advantage, then the opportunity is there. And that's why ISKCON is here. ISKCON is here to provide this opportunity for sincere seekers. Those who seriously want to make their human form of, take full advantage of their human form of life, ISKCON is there to guide them. And by taking advantage of the benefits that ISKCON is providing, their life will become successful. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Gaur Premanande, Hare. Does anybody have any question? Yes?
Yeah, I've been attending from the last few days or weeks. Evenings.
Yeah, sure.
And it's been learned that human birth is the most precious form of the whole entire species which are existing in the world.
Yeah.
And that human form is the only species which is interfering with the nature and disturbing it.
Yeah, right.
Why that is?
Yeah, you see, when you have a special opportunity, then you also have the option to utilize it or misutilize it. Like for example, a sharp knife. In the hand of an expert surgeon, it will kill, it will save a patient. Right? It will save a dying man. And that same knife in the hand of a criminal, a murderer, will kill him. So the application is what determines its utilization or misutilization.
But having that option is creating a lot of effort, you know, in wasting the things and then maintaining the nature.
Yeah, as I said, like you see, like a criminal gets a knife and thinks, oh, wonderful. With this knife, you know, I'll very expertly slash the throat of somebody and kill him. Whereas the same knife in the hand of a surgeon, he will think, this is such a wonderful knife. So I'm going to use it to operate my patients, to save their lives. So how you're going to utilize it, how you're going to use it, depends upon you. And that's why you need a guide who will direct you in how to utilize it. That's why the human, you know, like, okay, let us go back to one consideration. The human form is why it is so special. Because the human beings have an intelligence or consciousness that can be expanded to an unlimited extent, which others do not have, the facility others do not have. Like, apparently, human beings are also like animals. Sometimes it's described that man is a civilized animal. Now, what actually causes the difference between an animal and a man? Because he has the ability to expand his intelligence or consciousness. Now, the expansion of his consciousness begins when he becomes properly exposed to Krishna under the guidance of a qualified teacher. Just like an analogy has been given in this respect, is just as a bud begins to, bud has the ability to bloom, provided It is in the water, in the shell, has the shelter of water and exposure to sun. A lotus bud, when it has the shelter of the water, when it is in the water and it's exposed to the sun, then it begins to bloom. Similarly, human consciousness, human beings, when they become exposed to Krishna, under the guidance of a qualified teacher, his consciousness begins to bloom. On the other hand, if he is misdirected, then what happens? That intelligence is misused in trying to exploit the nature to gratify his senses, as it is happening today. That's why it is considered to be a misdirected civilization. It's not properly directed civilization, it's misdirected civilization. They are making all these endeavors that they are making for their comfort and pleasure is ultimately turning into the cause of their misery and distress. Like, you know, see, man makes all the arrangements, but ultimately what those arrangements end into? They end into chaos. Like yesterday, we were driving and we came to this, you know, that toll booth where you pay the toll for the using the highway. And we noticed that the big queue was on the easy pass. And the cash ones are empty. Now you see, they made arrangements for the easy pass to make it easy. But they ended up making it difficult because there's a huge queue in that line, and the cash ones, where you pay cash, there was hardly any car there. Similarly, like once I was driving in London from one point to another, and there was a big traffic jam. And someone just informed me that the statistics says that the time that it used to take to go from one point of London to another point 100 years back, today also it takes the same time. When they were using horse-driven horse carts, and the time it used to take today, it takes the same amount of time, if not more. In spite of having all these fast vehicles. So this is how, you see, we have to consider that, I mean, although we are trying to make all kinds of wonderful arrangements for our comfort and pleasure, but they are not ending up in giving comfort and pleasure, but they are actually causing more and more chaos and calamities. Any other question? I feel disappointed when there is no question. Yes. Okay, fine. You can say it from there.
Sorry, I asked you from here. Why is everything fear-based, not love-based? Every time we're talking about destruction, and then based on that fear, we are driven towards God and not love-based. And we say Krishna is love. So why is that? Every time we talk negative, not about the good things we can see around.
Yeah, because most of the people today have become criminals. And the criminals don't get the response of love. They get punishment and they're afraid of being punished. For example, you see a policeman. I mean, what is the actual status of this policeman? What should be our attitude towards this policeman? That he is a, you know, symbol of safety and security. If the policeman is there, then we know that nothing to worry about. But a criminal, when a thief sees a policeman, does he see him as a source of assurance and safety? He thinks that, oh, he is Jamadut hai. So it is because of our mentality, like because we are sinful, we are committing crime, that's why our attitude towards God is, oh, we are going to be punished. Yes, by nature's arrangement we are going to be punished. Right? So that's why there is fear. But when you become a law-abiding, good person, submissive to the Lord, then yes, your attitude towards Him will be for love. It's not that, I mean, God is all love, provided they are decent individuals. Those who are submissive to Him, yes, He is all love. But though when they are not being decent, rather their activities are indecent, immoral, criminal, sinful, then what can they expect? When they become aware of God, then they realize, oh, if God is there, then He is going to punish us. But it is good to submit to Him out of fear. But then from fear, it will be transformed into love. When you get, say for example, a naughty child is afraid of the father, right? Because he knows that the father is going to beat him up because of his improper activities. But when he becomes submissive to the father, then what does he get? He gets love from him. And even when the father punishes him, that is also an expression of his love. Because out of that punishment, through this punishment, he is actually rectifying his perverted mentality. Anyway, so the thing is that you can approach God with love, provided you are in the right frame of mind and your attitude and your behavior is proper. Like we are not afraid of God. Rather, we see as a symbol of love. Krishna means all attractive. Why should you be afraid of all attractive? Are you afraid of attractive one? Or you're afraid of somebody who is frightening? Now, is Krishna frightening? Did I ever say about Krishna? It's you who brought it. I didn't bring that he should be afraid, one should be afraid of God.
I didn't mean that. I said like, when we talk about Krishna, we are always...
You may talk about it. I'm not talking about Krishna in that way. All along what I have said is Krishna's mercy, Krishna's affection, Krishna's tenderness. How He is providing for everything. Where is the question of fear here? So my point will be like, try to understand Krishna the way He is, then you will see that He is full of love. Some people may say, some people may approach Him out of fear, but that is not what we are promoting. That's not what we are proposing. Like, see Him as the supreme shelter and the supreme maintainer. Alright? Like, there is no need to be afraid of God. Why should you be afraid of your loving father? If you are a good boy, why should you be afraid of father? Rather, you see him as the supreme shelter. And those who promote that kind of ideas, that God-fearing, their understanding of God is not proper. And that's why I was saying, like, they are afraid of God because of their criminal mentality, criminal attitude. Yes?
So they say that Krishna is the supreme controller, everything is a lila, everything is in play. So then, are we really the doers of any action, either good or bad? Or is Krishna the doer and we are just the instrument? And if we are the instrument, then are we liable for any bad deeds that happen to perform through us?
Yeah. Yeah, good. You see, you have the option to act on your own, act independently, or you have the option to be surrendered to Krishna and be guided by Him. That option you have. So when you decide to do things for yourself, then you are liable to the reactions. But when you surrender yourself to Krishna and allow Him to guide you, then He takes care of you. So it's up to you whether you're going to act independently or whether you are going to be submissive to Him. Now, when we act independently, as most of the people are doing in this material nature, that's why we are here. Because we have rejected Krishna's authority, we have been placed into this material nature where we have the opportunity to act independently. And as we try to act independently, we become subjected to arrangement of action-reaction principle. Arrangement of action and reaction. As you sow, so shall you reap. Then it is not Krishna who is controlling you. Krishna has set the arrangement of this action-reaction principle through the arrangements of the material nature. And there you are getting the results of your actions. Results of your actions means bad actions, wrong actions will make you suffer and right actions will make you enjoy. So we cannot really make Krishna liable to that, because it is we who are creating our own destiny. But when we surrender to Krishna, then yes, Krishna takes control of us. And we become free from this arrangement of action and reaction.
But then, isn't it easy to just superficially surrender Krishna, but yet continue to do bad deeds?
You can fool yourself, but you can't fool Krishna. You know, as you said, superficially, Krishna is not seeing your superficial act. Krishna is seeing right through your heart. What is your actual intention? And accordingly, you reciprocate. By superficial act, we may fool the whole world, but we won't be able to fool Krishna. He knows. Even what we do not know, He knows about us. So that's why our intention and our acts should be completely honest and sincere. Surrender means surrender. Surrender means having a total dependence upon Krishna. And act with that understanding and faith. That Krishna, I am surrendering myself to you. You do whatever you want to do. Allow me to become an instrument in your hand. Because I have to act. Like all of us, everybody, every moment is forced to act. We have to act. Even when we are sleeping, we are acting. Right? We are breathing, we are digesting our food, we are dreaming. So, without action, we cannot stay even for a moment. Nahi kashchit kshanam api jatu tishtati akarmukrit. Even for a moment, we cannot be inactive. So, we have to act, but let our actions be for the sake of Krishna's pleasure. When we act with that intention, then Krishna takes care of us. Okay. So, now what's the simplest option open to us? Should we be, actually this option is always open to us. Should we act independently in defiance of Krishna, or whether we are going to submit to Krishna. And if we surrender to Krishna, then our life becomes joyful. Yes.
Submitting to the Krishna is nothing like, it's not like doing nothing. I also agree that we should go ahead with our individuality, what to do.
Yes. You maintain your individuality, but you simply become a servant of Krishna. Right? It's not that you give up your individuality. You maintain your individuality, but remain submissive to Krishna. Act for His pleasure. The decision that you make is what?
The decisions which lead us to make it. It all depends on what we are here, right?
Okay, I'll give you an example. You see, Arjun is fighting a battle. Duryodhana is also fighting the battle. What's the difference between Arjun and Duryodhana? Arjun is fighting for Krishna's sake. Duryodhana is fighting to win the kingdom for himself. Arjun didn't have any motivation of winning the kingdom and enjoying it. He is fighting because Krishna wanted him to fight. So that's the difference. Arjun maintained his individuality. Right? Just as Duryodhana is maintaining his individuality. But what's the difference? Duryodhana is not submissive to Krishna, whereas Arjun is.
But my point here is, I've seen many of the devotees, don't take me wrong here. When you are trying to be submissive to the Lord, whether it's Krishna or someone, is it not like we are losing our own thought of improvement in that direction and completely going towards the devotion here? I agree that we are going towards the more submissive way or wherever we are heading towards, but in this material world, at least few of the individuals have seen who has more talent, but that talent has not been blossomed into this devotion. Devotion should be there, but to a certain extent, in my opinion.
Well, I'll make a very simple proposal. It will be more appropriate for you to understand by deciding what you are going to do in this situation. You have some, what talents you have, whether you are going to utilize these talents for Krishna's service or for your own pleasure. What others are doing, don't bother about that. Right? What you are going to do, just please consider that. And if you feel that somebody is able to do something for the benefit of this world, for the benefit of propagating Krishna consciousness, then have a talk with them and guide them. You get the point?
Because where I'm going to is, let us say, you are a very good orator, right? You have experience, right? And we are learning from you right now. Mother usually will be there, who has some more experience. He has some and with this devotion, is it not like we are letting a person individuality or going towards the devotion, and it's not like trying to understand its own what talents or what we have in himself,
yeah,
so that they can blossom.
Yeah, right. That's the point actually I was trying to make also. That if you feel that somebody can be better utilized in the path of devotion, then go ahead and guide him. Right?
But they should follow.
Huh?
But they should follow.
They will follow only when you become an example yourself. Huh? So that's why I was saying that you first become an example yourself and then you guide others. And that will be the, you know, appropriate way to approach. Otherwise, what will happen, you know, like if we just tell them, do, you know, you are not doing this, you are not doing that, then it is not going to generate a positive reaction. Like his reaction can be, what are you doing? Isn't it? That's why it's important that first of all, we become exemplary ourselves in our act. And then, we don't even have to tell them. They'll come to us and ask, please tell me what can I do? Like, you see, when a teacher tells somebody, when the teacher tells his student, do this, do that, the student accepts it. But if just anybody comes and tells him to do this, do that, you know, like he will not, he may not accept it. And your intentions are noble. So that's why I'm just suggesting that make a proper application of that intention for the benefit of everyone. Like it's very good, you know, like say, just to give an example, like somebody has some ability, right? To say, somebody has some ability to build something. Say, so ability is in constructing buildings, right? Now, you can approach him, you can go and tell him that, look, why don't you use your talent for Krishna?
You're going to point right now. That's
right.
That's what I was trying to
Yeah,
say.
Right. Now, you go and tell him that do it for Krishna. But even better will be when you have a plan to build a temple for Krishna and then you tell that, look, I want to build a temple for Krishna. Can you please help me? Now tell me which approach is going to be more effective. Like, one is you are just telling him and leaving it up to him. But the other is that you are facilitating him to utilize his talent. The another thing is that if you propose something without providing proper facility, then you are actually running the risk of being misunderstood as being critical. Like you say, why don't you do this? You know, it may be seen as a criticism. Whereas if you create the facility, or if you take him to a situation where he can have the facility, then you are paving his way to utilize his talent in the service. Alright. Yes, you have a question? You raised your hand, yeah.
I just had a comment to make about this. I personally don't see how the path of devotion is opposed to self-improvement. I mean, whenever I try to follow devotion, I don't see it hampering me in any way or reducing my professional or material abilities in any way. If anything, it just adds another dimension to it.
Yeah.
And improves it. So.
Yeah, very good. Very good, yeah. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Now,
what's the last part of your question?
What I want to say, like you just told, that we should
Okay. Do you have a child?
Yeah.
Huh? Okay. Now, don't you decide to which school you are going to send him? Or you just leave it like that?
No.
Let him go and find out whichever school he wants. Why do you, how do you decide? You find out which is the best school. So similarly, when it comes to finding the path and selecting a teacher, you have to use your intelligence and find out which is the right path. If you say all the paths are the same, it's something like saying all the schools are the same. But will it mean, will it be proper to say all the schools are the same? Or the schools have differences? Right? And not only different schools, there are different grades also, different levels. So the discrimination is naturally desired. I can tell you for myself, since I came to this path, or since even I started to search for this path, I made one point, that wherever I find the best, I'm going to take that. Even when after I joined ISKCON, I was open. That if anything is better than ISKCON, I will take that. And to tell you frankly, so far I haven't found anything better than this in last 35 years. Alright. If you have anything better, please come and tell me. I'll take it. I'll accept it. So we should go for the best. Why should we compromise for the... Why should you compromise in this case?
You cannot criticize others.
Am I criticizing anybody?
No.
to call the best, is not a criticism of others. Rather, I will say, let them become best also. And that's why I am just trying to tell everybody that this is the best I found. If you want, you can take it. And if you have anything better than this, please give it to me. I'm open. Okay.
One last question. You gave us one excellent example. Because the knife in the hands of criminals easily defies all the others.
Knife in the hand of a surgeon.
Yeah, surgeon, you deliberately had to use it. The same thing right now, over the past, especially 100 years, technology has improved tremendously. Especially we are all technology professionals too.
Yeah, right.
So what do you think in another 100 years is going to save the planet, or are we going to be in somebody criminal's hand and then the entire thing will be involved?
You have answered the question. So my answer will be very simple. Actually, use this technology for spreading the right message across the world. You know, what is this technology is doing? It's facilitating, right? It is expanding the domain of communication. So these are all very wonderful opportunities. But now the question is whether we're going to use these opportunities to uplift ourselves or degrade ourselves. Unfortunately, in today's world, these opportunities are degrading people. And that is leading to a very, very dangerous situation. But this opportunity, this facility, can be utilized in uplift mankind. And that is how it should be utilized.
But the problem is, it takes 1,000 people to build a tower, twin tower, but it takes only 2 people to bring it down. So same thing, 100 years from now, maybe the technology will be too powerful, you need only 2 criminals out of 50 people.
That's true. That's very true. Let a crazy guy have an access to all these nuclear warheads. And yeah, just not even 2 guys, 1 guy can destroy the whole planet. Because the kind of arrangement that has been made, all the destructive arrangements that has been made, like All it takes is just one insight.
So is that Kali Yuga then?
It is Kali Yuga. But mind you, Kali Yuga is a dangerous age. But it has one great advantage. And that advantage is that just by taking shelter of Krishna, one can very easily make spiritual advancement and achieve his spiritual perfection. So in one hand, it's a very, very critical stage. But at the same time, it has a great advantage. So what will happen? There will be a very critical calamity, a very, very dangerous situation. But in that situation, if you take shelter of Krishna, then immediately you'll be saved from the situation and you'll be placed in a most wonderful spiritual state of existence. It says, do you know Sanskrit? Anyway, I'll explain. Kaler doshe nidhe rajan. Mind you, this was spoken 5,000 years, not even 5, it was recorded 5,000 years ago. It was spoken a long time, long, long time ago. It was spoken to King Nimi by Karabhajana Muni. Nimi is the forefather of Janak, Sita's father, Janak Raj. Their family actually, this line descends from King Nimi. So he's telling him about the age of Kali. Long, long time ago. It was in Satya Yuga practically. He's saying that the age of Kali is a most degraded age, most dangerous age. Kalir doshe nidhe rajam. Asti hi eko mahan guna. But it has one great advantage. Kirtana deva krishnasya. Just by chanting the holy name of Krishna, mukta sanga param brajit, one can become free from the dangerous situation of this material existence. So you see, like in one hand, there is a very dangerous situation. But at the same time, there is an opportunity to just take shelter of Krishna just by chanting. You don't even have to have the temple with deities and worship Krishna. Just by chanting Krishna's name, you can become free from the dangerous situation immediately. And, you know, mind you, these are not just some myth. These are not just some fictitious presentation. These are not just some fairy tales. These are facts. And when one applies it in a proper way, one will derive the required or result that has been promised. Like it's something like, you know, there is a nuclear holocaust. That is the outcome of Kali Yuga. And in that situation, if you just take shelter of Krishna's holy name, just chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. You may not even be able to finish the whole mantra. But if you just utter one syllable, Krishna, you'll be delivered. And that's the assurance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they have been reinforced or supported by the authorities like the great spiritual personalities. Those who had no reason to mislead us or, you know, to say something which is not true or unreal. These are all, you know, extremely elevated, completely selfless, totally detached individuals who had no reason to lie. They have reconfirmed these facts. So that's how we have to have the faith. Situation will become dangerous, extremely dangerous, but we can take shelter of the Holy Name. And just by doing that, we can become free from this very deadly situation. Okay. Yes? Hare Krishna.
How do you classify cow's milk as vegetarian?
How do you classify?
Cow's milk as vegetarian.
Yeah, it is the best vegetarian source of food. Cow's milk. You know, milk is cow's affection. It's the love that turns blood into milk. It's the affection of the mother that turns the blood, actually transforms blood into milk. So cow therefore is treated as a mother. The mother, just as the mother's love turns her blood into milk, similarly cow's affection is turning her blood into milk, and she is offering it to us. And this is the most wonderful food. I don't know why nowadays they're developing a misconception that cow's milk and milk products are bad. Actually, it is bad because their stomach has been so badly contaminated by eating cow's meat that that stomach cannot digest milk. When the stomach has been filled with the violence to the cow, how can it accept the affection of the cow? That is what is happening to the people of this world today. But actually, cow's milk is the most wonderful food for mankind. Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We can have a little kirtan now.